Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. On this week's literary discussion, we're donning our trench coats and whipping out our magnifying glasses, as we're on the hunt for this week's best crime novels. And our lead expert on the case is author Kathy Rensenbrink. Kathy, welcome to the show. It's a good week for crime writing, this one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a cracking week. There's loads of really brilliant crime novels. And actually, through into the year, there's lots of crime novels. I think The Success of the Girl on the Train by Paula Hawkins, which is just huge. And even before that, actually, books like Gone Girl and Before I Go to Sleep. With publishing works, when something is successful, it kind of gets replicated.
There's a snowball effect, isn't there?
It does, yeah. And that is no bad thing. And I don't at all mean to paint these three crime novels as pale replicas, because they are all beautiful objects of themselves. So I think it's quite a positive thing, really.
Fantastic. Well, on that note, let's begin with Little Deaths, the debut novel by Emma Flint. Kathy, first of all, tell us a little bit about Flint and the case of Alice Crimmins that inspired this book.
Yeah, so as she says, there's a kind of meet the author thing in the book, which is very interesting and amusing at the end. She also talks about being an intern at Faber, and she saw Ted Hughes in the corridor and it made her fall off her stepladder, which I thought was quite funny. But she's been fascinated with true crime all her life, really, and then eventually found this case, Alice Crimmins, and wanted to explore it fictionally, and that's what she does here. So it's 1965, it's summer, we're in Queens in New York, and Ruth Malone, our character, is a mother with two small children. She's not by any means an ideal mother in anyone's views. She likes drinking, she's got boyfriends, she's separated from her husband, there's a custody battle going on. She's kind of, I think the old-fashioned word people would have used to describe her is she's a slut, in that sense of, you know, her house isn't very clean, her children aren't necessarily looked after. Yeah, slovenly, slattern, all those horrible words people use to describe.
All beginning with SL for some reason.
Yes, don't they? And then the two children go missing. And, of course, lots of people, lots of the police jump to certain conclusions about Ruth, and rather than look for the children, they decide to blame her.
I see, and it's a case that's inspired numerous novels and plays in the past. This isn't the first one. Why do you think so many people have written about it, and what does Flint's novel, I guess, add to that oeuvre already?
It's very interesting, isn't it, that I would never read a true crime book that was actually about something that had really happened, but I enjoy the fictional, and I enjoy fictional retellings of situations. I think the way that women are perceived and punished for bad behaviour is endlessly fascinating. Something I still feel very preoccupied with. I think the way Kate McCann has always been treated by the press shows that this is a continuing theory. I was talking to some people recently about mental health and why nobody really likes being honest about their mental health. I think definitely one of the reasons, if you're a mother, is that if something happens to your child, you don't want then lots of people saying that actually it must be you, you know. And I was reading the newspaper the other day, and there was a case in which someone was described as having a history of depression. And this history of depression was really being used to make it seem that this person, this woman, was more likely to have committed a crime. So I think that all those, I think all these themes and issues are absolutely bang up to the moment. So very relevant to our novel in 65, but actually also very relevant now and probably onwards and possibly sadly forever so.
And do you think that Emma Flint's novel takes a view on that? Do you think there's an opinion behind it that the way that we treat people with mental illness is a problem?
I don't think it's a campaigning novel, which is, I think, a good thing. I don't think you ever really want to read a novel feeling you've been campaigned at. But I think clearly she is interested in the way that the press, the media, the police treat women who aren't seen as behaving themselves in the right way. What it mainly is just a living, breathing novel. You absolutely believe in the characters. It's beautifully written. She's got she can really write a good sentence. And you absolutely feel there. The descriptions of Ruth as a character, her physicality, her clothes, all that sort of stuff is really well done. So it is like taking a trip to a hot, sticky summer's day in Queens in 1965?
Well, that was actually going to be one of my questions, because Emma Flint was born in Newcastle upon Tyne here in the northeast of England. How does she capture kind of 1960s Queens? How does she do that?
Well, I really felt she did, because I wasn't in 1965 in Queens either. So you can only ever, as a reader who doesn't know, it's like when you read historical novels and say, yes, this is very authentic. It's like, well, how would I know? But for me, it seems pitch perfect for me. I've no idea what an elderly American would make of it. But I really loved it. And I think that's essentially how fiction works, isn't it? Some writers actually do tend to stay close to home, write about what they know. Other people look far afield geographically and often into the past historically. And obviously this is both, but I think it really works. Very interested to know what she's going to do next. I think she says again in the bit of it that she's writing a 1920s novel, again inspired by true crime, and I think set in the UK this time.
Fascinating. Well, we'll look forward to seeing that as well. Little Deaths by Emma Flint is out today, published by Picador. Let's move on now to Good Me, Bad Me by Ali Land. In this work, we meet Annie, a teenage daughter of a serial killer mother. As she settles into a new life with a new foster family, she struggles to deal with just how many of her mother's traits she might have inherited. Kathy, it sounds interesting. This has been hyped up to be one of the big psychological thrillers of the year. Do you agree?
I think it's excellent. Yeah, it's right at the edge of what I can take, actually. I found it very frightening, quite disturbing. Admittedly, I have a very low threshold for being frightened and disturbed. But there are a couple of times reading it, I just thought, oh, can I better carry on? But again, it's extremely well written, and you do really care about this girl, Annie, who she gets a new name, obviously, so she becomes Millie. And I think probably one of the reasons why it's disturbing is I think it is a question. It's an interesting and disturbing question, isn't it? What's happened to the children of the people that we're reading? You know, when we're reading the newspaper about people who've committed terrible crimes, what's happening to their children? Where are the children? So I think that's why it really works as a novel, because I think sometimes the best novels are those that seem almost a bit obvious. Why has nobody done that before? Why haven't we had a serial killer's daughter before? Surely that's a good idea for a novel. But nobody has done it before in this way. And I think it really works. It's fascinating, but yes, kind of uncomfortable.
It's kind of fertile ground for novel writing, isn't it? That idea that there's a kind of a devil within you, that you know you're not sure how much of your parents you have in you. And again, it's something that has kind of been borne out by psychoanalysis. I mean, I know that Ali Land was actually trained in children's mental health. Do you think that comes across in the psychoanalysis of this book?
I think it's very smart psychologically, and I'm really interested in all that sort of stuff, and I really enjoyed that part of the novel. I think one of the ways when fiction works really well is because it uses an extreme situation to explore things that we all worry about. So we probably, all of us that think, worry about why we are like we are, to what extent we've been shaped by our parents, our place, our geography, those are sort of perennial questions for everyone. And then, of course, in this case, it just becomes ever more pressing and urgent and difficult and tricky to work out. The character's very well drawn, Annie Millie, and she seems extremely believable. And I just think I think it's really well judged, because, again, if somebody said to me, I'm going to write a novel about a girl whose mum is a serial killer, I think I would really think like, oh, that's quite hard. But I think she achieves it really well. And she very much weaves together that on the one hand, Annie Millie has all these terrible problems. You know, she's seen terrible things. She doesn't want to be exposed at school. Her mother's currently on trial. Terrible things to worry about. But actually, also, what we think of as more day-to-day things to worry about, like the fact that people at school aren't very nice to her. And I think the way those two things weave together is extremely well done. She lives with Mike, is her sort of psychiatrist, and she's living with him and his family, which, again, I wonder whether that actually happens. Presumably it does. Who knows? Where are these children? But that's all very well done, because Mike has a daughter, Phoebe, and Phoebe isn't keen on Millie arriving as the latest in a long line of kind of waifs and strays with difficult pasts. So that's done really well. And of course, it all goes horribly wrong.
I was going to say, without giving too much away, I guess, talk us through a little bit of the plot. I mean, is there a really strong plot, or is it kind of more of a slow burn, I guess.
No, it's a very strong plot, and again, it's very cleverly done because of the one. So we start, we start with Annie, Millie, starting her new life. And so at the same time, the reader is learning all the terrible backstory, but then all the future story as well. And there's plot both in the past and in the future. And I think, I mean, technically, it's very accomplished, I think, because that's quite difficult as well, isn't it? Some novels, I think, just drown in their own backstory. You know, it's on the first page. You know, I was sitting down wondering how I would ever get over the fact that my mother was a serial killer. There's an awful lot of serial killer story there, but where are you going with that?
Right.
You know, because novels need momentum. You can't just have a big backstory. You need a backstory that kind of informs and feeds into whatever's happening in the present. And I think that works really well here.
Good Me, Bad Me is out today, published by Penguin. Finally, let's talk about Sirens. This is another debut novel by British bookseller and writer Joseph Knox. Set in Manchester, it follows a disgraced young detective called Aidan Waits, who's on the hunt for an MP's missing daughter. What follows is a murky whirlwind of drugs, blackmail and deception. Cathy, what was your take on this?
Oh, I just loved this. And, you know, it felt really sort of old-fashioned, classic, but also very new and all at the same time, which I enjoyed. So it's kind of, it's noir, really, but feels also bang up to date. I liked the Manchester setting. I grew up in Yorkshire. And didn't go to Manchester that often, but when I did, I found it really exciting. You know, first time I drank a bottle of beer with a slice of lime in the neck was in Manchester. I tell you, I thought it was the bee's knees. So I kind of, I think it's sort of that whole, you know, young people, clubs, pubs, but ever the threat of people getting drawn into difficult things. And then the corruption angle, the MP angle is really good. So he's, Aidan Watts is involved in trying to find this MP's daughter, and the MP's very well drawn, and the daughter and all her issues. There's lots of sort of beautiful damaged women in the book, but somehow I never felt kind of exploitative or tacky in the way that sometimes I think fiction written by men in which male detectives are surrounded by dead women can feel a bit grim. But this doesn't, there's none of that in this. It just feels very beautiful. There's a kind of a wistful tone to it that you feel that Aidan would really like the world to be a better place, just sadly it's not.
Right. As you say, it follows the struggle of the girl who's disappeared, but also Waits' own personal battle. How are his flaws woven into the narrative of this, of the criminal case?
Well, right from the beginning, I love the first line of this. Can I read it to you?
Please.
Afterwards, I went back onto the night shift. They'd never trust me in the daylight again.
That's I like
great,
starting a book with afterwards is
I know,
so
very good
because you're always like, okay, well, instantly yeah. You want to know what's happened.
Exactly. So again, it's another, a bit like Good Me, Bad Me, actually. Lots of things have happened in the past, lots of things are happening now, and they're woven together really well. I do like a damaged police person. You do think, again, it must be a, presumably we just suspend disbelief on that, because surely like all our police aren't always, I don't know, like drunk and with
well,
black eyes and stuff.
But it's a very archetypal character, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Does he seem a bit like that? Does Aidan feel like a bit of an archetype, or is he?
No, he feels like an absolutely fleshed out, 100% real person. Mm-hmm. Again, you do ever so slightly think there are times when I could have gone, oh, come on, you're a bit better than this. Why don't you go and do something else? You know, maybe retrain or something. You could have a nicer life.
Could be a chef.
You're quite a nice chap. but no, he's he's a kind of a well-meaning person surrounded by chaos and difficulty, really. Wants to help people, wants to save people, doesn't always feel that he can. The nightlife side is really well drawn, you know, the bars, the clubs, the parties, the gangsters, I learnt loads of stuff about drugs that I didn't know before. Maybe my knowledge isn't accurate, that's the other thing. I've no idea whether the drug side is accurate or not, but it seemed pretty convincing to me. And yeah, it's very good. I found it, it's quite a chunky-sized book, and I found it really enjoyable. It's just a nice, racy, well-written, quality page-turner.
And we know that this is the first book in a series. Do we know what's coming next, or how many books there are going to be in total here?
No, but I think it will work really well. I really want to read more of this world and more of the character. I think that's another test that this book passes with flying colours, where you finish a crime novel feeling completely satisfied, but actually also wanting more.
Fantastic.
So that's good. I think sometimes series novels feel a little bit too much like the author's already started thinking about the next one, kind of a couple of chapters before the end right. of the one that they're on. Whereas this finishes in a very nice, resolute way, but then you kind of think like, oh, hopefully he'll get a wriggle on with writing the next one.
Fantastic. And finally, Kathy, if you had to recommend just one of these books to our listeners to quench their crime novel thirst, which one would you
no,
pick?
That's
is that
too
really,
horrible.
Really difficult?
That is so mean. I don't think I can, actually. And I do think the very interesting thing about them, all crime novels, all young British writers, all coming out on the same day, actually three incredibly different books. So maybe you'll let me off the hook and we'll just think how wonderful it is that there's lots of range in British crime writing at the moment.
All right, well dodged. We'll let you get away with that one. Sirens by Joseph Knox is out today, published by Doubleday and Transworld. And that, I'm afraid, brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks very much to my guest, Kathy Rensenbrink. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. This show was produced by Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time tomorrow when Karen Krasanovich will be in the studio to talk films. But for now, goodbye from me and thanks very much for listening.